So I thought we'd talk about two things because the radio station is going to broadcast and webcast a lot of the deep listening
Yes.
concert this weekend. So we may talk about that a little, and then a little bit this Alana idea.
Okay.
So tell us about the deep listening conference.
The deep listening conference. Okay, it is deep listening art slash science, and this conference is the first, and it's an international conference. We have 75 presentations happening, and also there are at least 100 already registered. We have a few more days to go and the days of for registrations to happen. So we're very pleased because it's a full representation, I think, of the many different things that we've done through the years. It started with Deep Listening Retreat, 1991. We did 20 years of deep listening retreats, each summer a week or 2 weeks, with upward of 20-plus people coming, attending a retreat for a week. So we've done that. It was 10 years in the Sangre de Cristo Mountains, at Rose Mountain Retreat Center, for the first 10 years. I made a commitment to do it for 10 years. And then we continued and came down and did retreats at Big Indian in upstate New York for 4 years, and then back to Rose Mountain for a couple more, and then again I think we did another Big Indian retreat, but then we did retreats in Europe, in Ireland, and in Spain, and of course we've done them in Canada and in other places as well over those 20 years. But that the 20 years of deep listening retreats brought out a lot of information from the practice of listening together and discussing what listening is, what it means, what how it is, and how deep can you go. I mean, first of all, you can hear something, but hearing is not listening. Hearing is the ear gathering. It's like a microphone gathering sound, gathering information, and transmitting it then through the mechanism of the ear to the brain. And from there, listening takes place in many different ways. And it's based in experience. How much experience have you? I mean, how many times have you recorded an interview, for example? How do you listen to that? I mean, I'm sure that there would be a lot of very interesting thoughts and ideas about the way you listen to an interview, or the way people who are listening now to this interview, how are you listening to it? You know, how are you interpreting and taking in the information, associating it, storing it, deciding what you might do or not do, or whatever. You know, I mean, there's many, many different aspects to listening.
So it's less about what happens here and more about what happens here?
Well, it's what happens all over.
All over.
No, because it's not centered in one place. The skin listens, body listens, ear listens, brain listens, somehow. But this is the point of the conference, art slash science, because through all of these years of questioning what is listening and what is then is deep listening, I feel that there needs to be some scientific research, because listening, like consciousness, is something that takes place, I mean, and is emergent. We know we're conscious, or I think we know we're conscious, but scientifically, what is it? And this is a very open area for research. And I say listening is mysterious. How we do that?
There's still a lot we don't know about it.
Amazingly, a lot. And so I'm hoping that this conference will bring together a lot of information and also initiate further research. And so I hope with this conference that we start a real significant research program on listening that can take place anywhere that anyone is interested in doing research. But I would hope that we would be joined by scientists.
How are the scientists, when you approach them about these ideas about deep listening, how are they? Are they receptive?
Well, some are, and some, you know, are dismissive. We have Seth Horowitz, who is an auditory neuroscientist, who will give the keynote for the science part of this conference. He's written a book called The Universal Sense, How Hearing Shapes the Mind. So I got in touch with him and invited him to be the keynote speaker, and then I was talking to him about listening, and then so now he has framed a book or outlined a book on listening, because it hadn't occurred to him quite like I have been doing with the deep listening classes and retreats and so on. I'd been teaching deep listening at RPI, where I'm a professor of practice, for 12 years now. This is each semester.
This may be difficult. Can you give the listeners who may be unfamiliar with the term deep listening, can you just give them an idea what you mean?
Well, what I think when I first put the two words together, which was it was 1988, and the Deep Listening Band got its name from that. We were recording in a cistern in Washington State, and this cistern is now known as the Dan Horpole System in Fort Worden Recreation Center, but it has the name because we went in there and did this recording, which is still available. Deep Listening New Albion released it in 1989. But in the liner notes, I wrote about deep listening. And partly it was a pun. We were deep in the cistern, was 14 feet underground. And of course, Stuart Dempster and I loved punning. But at the same time, it was because this cistern is the acoustic environment of it. It was 45 second reverberation time. That means if you played a tone, it would be there for 45 seconds. And it's a very unusual reverberation.
It provided a natural deep listening.
A natural deep listening. And what it meant was that you didn't want to make a mistake, right? Because it would be there for 45 seconds. But in any case, that aside, we did not plan anything. We simply started to play. And we had to listen not only to what we were playing, we had to listen to one another, but we also had to listen to what was coming back from the cistern. So this meant that our listening to a focus and to the whole was expanded greatly. And so this is a form of, that's why I called it deep listening, because I recognized that. And then we keep taking it further, you know.
How has do you think culturally the term has impacted the society? Do you think there's a change in the way people consider listening in the last 20 years?
I think so. I mean, it's not so unfamiliar now as it was, you know, 20 years ago. If you Google deep listening, you're going to find it all over the place. And people are using it, you know, taking it and using it.
That's what I more mean. Do you find, like, everyday people are thinking about listening a little bit more than they did,
yes.
Consider sound more than they did?
I think so. I think that there's a little advance in that. And, you know, it's like the 100 monkey phenomena. 100 monkeys.
Typing Shakespeare or?
No, 100 monkeys. After the 100th monkey learns something, then all of them know.
Oh, I see. Okay. So we've gotten to that point in society.
I think we have, yes.
All right. Is there anything else people should know about the Deep Listening Conference this
Well,
weekend?
It starts Friday. Friday morning I give my keynote address, which I have to get ready. And I'm going to be talking about the future of the program, which we are moving into RPI, Rensselaer. This summer we've had a summer course, deep listening, which I teach in the spring, fall and winter. But this summer course was taught by Doug Van Noort, who is our conference director, and he's worked with me for a number of years. So he taught the course, and then he's doing a pre-conference workshop, which is starting today, I think. 3 days before it's a workshop that he's doing involving electronics and deep listening, and so this is three things that we've contributed to the summer program at RPI, and this seems like they're very successful, and that everything is filled, and it seems like we would be able to do summer programs at RPI with confidence that it would work.
So there's definitely interest in the deep listening in the Hudson Valley.
Oh yeah, very much so. But the people are coming from all over the world, because we've done retreats 20 years. There's people from Ireland. There's people from Sweden, from Germany, Switzerland. I don't know, there's people coming, as you know, locals as well as national and international. So there's a chance, and also some of the presentations are from people that I don't know at all. But their abstracts were very right on and very interesting. So.
And this is the first conference?
The first one that we've ever done like this.
There's going to be more after this?
Well,
we'll see.
We've got to go through
we'll
this
hear.
A little bit, I think. I hope we will be doing more conferences. Yes.
All right, and we're also here at Alana, and we're talking to you about doing some sort of performance here in this site on the Hudson Valley. I guess you hadn't been here before, but what are your impressions of Alana?
It is magnificent. It's such a beautiful landscape, and it really warms my heart that. So many of my friends and people who have helped to preserve it and protect it from being destroyed by commercial interests, and so I'm very, very pleased that I'll be able to take part in this special event. So September 22nd, I'll be participating with a number of other very interesting artists. And DJ Spooky will be one of them, Paul Miller, and Previte.
Bobby Previte, drummer, yes.
The drummer, and there are others. I can't think of their names at the moment because I just heard them for the first time.
How do you think Alana fits into the Hudson Valley art history?
Well, because this is the home of the Hudson Valley School, the artist.
Frederick Church?
Yes, Frederick Church and so forth. This amazing house that he built and the details of it are just simply amazing. But
and the views, too.
The views are just totally mind-blowing to see out and to see so much, to see the Hudson River and all of the beautiful farms and so much. Around, but as Mark the curator was telling us, people don't necessarily get those views because they don't take the roads and take the walks that they could. And so this event seems to be calling for people to move all through the environment here.
And see the views that Thomas Cole and Frederick
yes,
Church and
all
other...
of the artists were working from, and so I'm going to gather a group together of participants to perform some scores that I they're called text scores, and I just released the anthology of text scores from 1970 to the present, and these pieces. Often interact with the environment, and so, for example, the first thing I thought of was my rock piece, it's called, where people take a pair of rocks, resonant rocks, and create a pulse. And other people are also creating pulses so that you begin to get this wonderful kind of percussive thing going. But the design is that each person has to create a pulse that's different from any other pulse, so that then they begin to, but they sync together in a very different way than if you were trying to do synchronization of a single pulse. But this is the synchronization or asynchronization of many different pulses. And so if you hear yourself syncing with somebody exactly their pulse, you have to change it, you know, during the course of this. But this rock piece can be moving around in the environment, so a group could start it either at a distance from each other or close together and then or move in any direction, so that you'll hear the sounds moving through the environment.
So the echoes will kind of map out the environment.
That's
for
right.
You.
They will. They start to articulate the environment.
Yeah,
space.
The space. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's one of many different kinds
in
of
textbooks.
No, text scores.
Text scores. I'm sorry.
Yeah, text scores. That means
it's a new book of text scores.
Yes, it's a new book of text scores. Anthology of text scores.
And who put it out?
Deep Listening Publications. Yeah. So we'll have those scores, and we may have some of them poster size for people to look at and enjoy and maybe participating in. And so I'm very excited about the possibility of interacting with this landscape. For instance, I have a piece, one piece is called Environmental Dialogue, where you're listening and blending with the sound, so you can hear all these wonderful things that are going on, but the dialogue is not to imitate, but it's to blend. To here's that bird, you know, something like that, and try to get exact with it.
I guess that's what you